Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio. Join us each week as we delve into some of life's most complex questions. It's time to explore the unexplained with your hosts, Karen Frazier and Rick Hale.
Welcome to Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network. Unfortunately, Rick and Karen aren't here tonight. Rick is in Colorado. He's touring the infamous Stanley Hotel, and Karen is spending time with the family. This is Chad Wilson, Paranormal Underground Magazine's publisher and your co-host for tonight. Also as co-host, we have our esteemed science editor, J.D. Harrison. He's been a friend and integral part of the magazine and radio show since their inception. It is my honor to have him hosting beside me tonight. Welcome, J.D.
Hey, Chad. Hey, everybody. Good evening.
So, just to let everybody know, it seems that the Zat chat has been having issues, so if for some reason you get kicked out, just keep trying to get back in. You could also listen without being in chat if it comes down to it. So how you been doing, JD?
Been real good, Chad. Keeping busy, all that good stuff. How about you?
Good. It's been a while since you've been on here with us.
Yeah, I've been, kept with other things right now. That's all I can say. A lot of field work and that type of thing. But I've been around. Been trying to be, anyway. You know how that is. Sometimes real life takes over.
Well, so you got some bad storms tonight, you said?
We got a couple. On and off. Part of that, yeah, typical Mississippi weather and all that good stuff. Yeah. So, how you just deal with it, hunker down. And I know earlier Cheryl was asking me about a storm cellar, and we don't have storm cellars; don't do that here. So,
when I lived down there and right around Tupelo, my papa had built one in the side of the hill, right there by the road, and it was like a little. It wasn't so much a cellar. It was like he called it a tornado shelter. And a little pipe at the top, let the air in and stuff. But it'd be like you'd have like 20 people in there. It's like really
small. Right. Yeah. We don't have any up north, northern part of the state. The groundwater is not as close. Here in the south, they can't dig very far before you hit groundwater. Everything be flooded. So, like I told her, she asked me what you do. I said, well, you just kind of hope that none of the trees or all the trees fall away from the house. And it's about all you can do. So,
well, stay safe.
Yeah. Well, we're going to be fine. Let's just hope the internet doesn't kick out on me.
Yeah. Well, on tonight's show, we have Thomas Fusco, who will be joining us. He is the author of the book Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, Merging Science, the Spiritual, and the Supernatural. So I look forward to talking to him. Seems like we've had him on here once before, back in last summer. So I don't know. I guess we're going to be talking about super geometry, stuff like that tonight. Interesting stuff.
All right, Chad, you been doing any investigating or planning lately? I know I've seen a couple posts on Facebook about something going on there.
Actually, we had went up to, I think the last time we actually went investigating was up to the Hotel Alex Johnson in Rapid City, South Dakota. Mm-hmm. That was last fall, right before school started. It was okay. I just hated the drive. It was like a 40-hour round trip drive, so I was wore out.
Well, we've been going to New Orleans quite a bit, and if there's any friends from New Orleans listening tonight, shout out to all of you. It's very interesting, as everybody knows, a lot of history and a lot of supposedly haunted places, and had the pleasure of staying at several of them, and had some interesting experiences down there, truly. Things that I had to file under my things that make you go, file. So,
Well, I was wanting to actually, we were talking about this earlier before the show, is, and I had watched a show on TV, and they talked about vampires in New Orleans. Have you ever heard anything about?
Yes, I actually am very good friends with somebody that has a vampire shop, believe it or not. Yeah, they sell a lot of vampire accessories, including custom fangs.
So these are for people who actually like to pretend that they're vampires. But
well, yeah, and then there's those who actually believe that they actually exist there and live there. Yeah, there's a lot of... legend, the more you delve into it. One of the best times to go, believe it or not, everybody associates New Orleans with Mardi Gras. I would suggest Halloween.
Okay.
It's the second biggest celebration next to Mardi Gras. There's actually parades there and all. It's a lot easier to navigate because there's not as many people. But they have a traditional thing that occurs. It kicks off about 10 o'clock at night and goes till dawn, called the Vampire's Ball.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
And it's a very big deal. Yeah, we were down there last Halloween, and it was pretty awesome. We didn't go to the Vampire's Ball, but there was a lot of people there that were going and looking forward to it. So it might be something in the future here.
I think we should all get together sometime and go down there. I think it'd be awesome. Well,
that would be fine with me. I'd be more than happy to do that.
As you say, there's a lot of fans of the show, or the magazine down there, too.
Yeah, we have quite a few down there. Oh. I talk to them a lot when we go, and we usually go down about a weekend every other month, and we'll stay for 3 days, and I meet up with people. We talk and go over things and all. It's very interesting. They always keep me up to date on the latest happenings and what happened where and when and all, and it's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go down there. It seems like a cool place.
Okay. Well, you know, we'll get down there.
Yeah. Well, now,
sorry, guys. We're kind of not just being new hosts here.
And
this for a while, but we're playing with the chats and stuff to make sure they're working, and I've got three or four coming up and down. So if we sound a little distracted, it's probably because we are. But we'll get over that here shortly.
Well, Michelle, you want to talk about the contest?
Yeah, I would love to. We are on our last week of the May 2013 Paranormal Underground contest. And actually, we're on the last couple of days, really, not the last week. But we would like to encourage you to enter this contest. We have a giveaway, and it involves Paranormal Underground magazine. We are going to give away three free issues of Paranormal Underground magazine digitally. So that means if you win, you're going to get three issues emailed to you via email, and it'll be a PDF of the magazine that you can just put on your computer and read whenever you want to. If you already subscribe to the magazine, we'll give you three past issues that you haven't read. And that is basically our contest for this month. You just need to email editor@paranormalunderground.net and tell me your favorite cryptid and why, and then you'll be entered into the contest to win some free magazines. That's all you need to do. The contest ends tomorrow, and that is May 31st, 2013. So please do email, and you'll be entered into the contest. And then we'll have a new contest next month for June. Not sure what that is yet, but I'm working on it. Yes. So, Oh, shout out to Karen and Rick. Hope you're having fun. Yeah. And thanks, JD and Chad, for co-hosting this week.
Well, I wanted to tell Rick to say hi to Jack Torrance while he was at the Stanley, but...
Well, you just did.
Oh, I'm glad he's listening. He's probably walking around.
I think I just saw a post on Facebook from him about... having a good show, so who knows?
Cool.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a break.
Yes.
And when we come back, we'll be with Thomas Fusco. So we'll be back in just a moment on the HD Radio Network.
Hi, this is Cheryl Knight, editor for Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Chad Wilson, Paranormal Underground Magazine's publisher. Every month, Paranormal Underground Magazine explores the unexplained by examining topics that range from haunted sites to ufology to cryptozoology. We also spotlight investigators and researchers who continue to pave the way in a field that seeks to answer some of life's most complex questions.
If you want to read about topics like psychic phenomena, demonology, conspiracy theories, crystals and herbology, and much, much more, visit ParanormalUnderground.net and start exploring the unexplained today. Visit us today at ParanormalUnderground.net and get a 12-month digital subscription for 15% off the cover price.
Hey everyone, it's Karen Frazier. I'm here with my co-host of Paranormal Underground Radio, Rick Hale.
Hi everyone.
We invite you to join Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network to explore the unexplained every Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific and other times in the flyover states.
Each week we talk with investigators in the field, researchers, authors, and experts about topics that include paranormal investigation, ufology, cryptozoology, and spirituality.
So please join us each Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern for Paranormal Talk with great guests right here on HazyRadioNetwork.com.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Hey, this is Karen Frazier, writer and radio host with Paranormal Underground. Since I wrote my book, Avalanche of Spirits, The Ghosts of Wellington, in 2010, people have asked me what happened next. In my new book, Dancing with the Afterlife, a paranormal memoir, my Wellington story continues. Dancing with the Afterlife is more than the continuation of the Wellington story, however. It's also the story of a lifetime of afterlife research and paranormal encounters. What I've learned has changed my life, and it might change yours as well. To learn more about Dancing with the Afterlife or to read an excerpt from the book, visit DancingWithTheAfterlife.com. Thank you.
Stars. Hi, this is Hazy, and you're listening to the Hazy Radio Network.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Hazy Radio Network, its affiliates, or sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only.
Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network. Tonight we have Thomas Fusco, an independent researcher who has devoted nearly three decades investigating the relationship between mind, physics, spirituality, parapsychology, scientific anomalies, and paranormal phenomena, with the goal of uncovering the unified cosmological framework that has eluded mankind for generations. Since the official launch of his book, Behind the Cosmic Veil, in November 2011, he has been invited to speak as a guest in over 200 national and international radio programs, including Coast to Coast AM, and has previously appeared right here on Paranormal Underground Radio about July of last year. He will be speaking and presenting at the upcoming Spirits, Shadow, and Secrets International Symposium to be held in the fall of 2014 in Edinburgh, Scotland, and was a participant in the VIP invitation-only think tank conference called The Gathering in November 2012. Welcome back to the Paranormal Underground, Thomas Fusco.
Well, thanks for having me back, guys.
How are you doing?
Oh, very good. Thank you.
This is Chad Wilson, the publisher of Paranormal Underground magazine, filling in for Rick Hale and Karen Frazier, who are both out tonight. And we also have with us our co-host, J.D. Harrison. He's the science editor for the magazine.
Hi, J.D.
How you doing, Thomas? Glad to have you.
It's going to be a fascinating conversation.
Yeah.
I'm sure it will be. I'm sure. Very interesting stuff. I've been over your material, and all. It's extremely interesting.
Well, I just want to start out by asking, what brought you to the point you're at now? What started you down the road to writing a book about your theories and how you feel the paranormal works?
Well, in my younger part of my life, I had several different what you might call parapsychological experiences.
Mm-hmm.
I don't talk about them on detail on the radio, but what it did for me, it called into question the model of reality that was taught to me in physics.
Okay.
Because our current models really don't accommodate the paranormal or the supernatural or the parapsychological, other than in very ambiguous ways. So, for me, the compelling question became, what kind of a universe can allow these things to occur, or how is the universe put together that can allow these kinds of phenomena and events to take place? Because clearly if they're experienced and they're observable, they are physical effects.
Okay.
And the effects are physical and they're real. They must have some sort of a cause that manipulates physical reality in those ways. And so that's where I embarked on this journey of exploration and discovery, a scholastic one, really.
Yeah.
After much work and dotting all the I's and crossing the T's,
mm-hmm.
I put it all in the book and published it.
Yeah, it's an interesting book. I read the vast majority of it. You say there is a need to quantify the paranormal, basically to be able to sit there and say, this is what makes paranormal things happen. How can paranormal investigators establish a sound scientific definition of the paranormal, that will stand up to peer review?
Well, that's a good question. And it's one of the things that I wrestled with very early on in my work, is to come up with a scientifically meaningful and relevant
mm-hmm.
definition to what constitutes quote-unquote paranormal phenomena. It's too often been used as kind of a catch basket for anything that's strange and weird. Let's call it paranormal. But that's not specific enough.
Yeah.
So in considering the question very carefully, I came to the conclusion that paranormal phenomena works by way of what physicists call non-locality, or to say it in a long way, non-local causality.
Okay.
And what that essentially means is you have a physical effect, which is physically observable and measurable, but it has no physical cause locally and directly connected to the effect. And so, for example, I like to talk about the difference between a normal and a paranormal voice. Like, say, a disembodied voice, for example, as a paranormal voice.
Okay.
The effect is the same in both cases. We have an instance where we have a compression wave, an acoustic compression wave, which is traveling through and agitating the medium that conducts it, which in this case, in most instances, would be the air.
Mm-hmm.
And those compression waves reach our eardrums and vibrate them at a specific frequency and amplitude, and we hear sound. So in both of these kinds of voices, the effect is identical. But the difference is, in a normal voice, there is a physical set of vocal cords locally connected in contact with the air column that those cords vibrate to conduct that compression wave to our eardrums. In a paranormal voice,
mm-hmm.
we don't have a physical set of anything locally connected to the air column to cause that vibration in it to hear the voice. And so when I considered all types of different kinds of what we might call supernatural phenomena, the paranormal, parapsychology,
mm-hmm.
All of the different effects that are observed and spoken about, all conform to the same criteria. This is why when I consider something like Bigfoot,
yeah.
that's cryptozoology. What is reflecting light from it into our eyes is obviously a physical body of some sort.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a local physical cause to the effect that's observed. And so this not only gives us a foundation from which to reckon with, but it also gives us a definition that is scientifically relevant because it's used in the field of physics to describe the exact same kinds of observations and phenomena.
Okay. Well, I know you have your typical traditional views of what paranormal activity actually is, but how does that view actually keep investigators from actually doing, worthwhile research in the field?
Well, there's a number of preconceptions that kind of interfere with our understanding. It's almost like if we look at the ancient worldview
mm-hmm.
of the night sky, for example. Many peoples thousands of years ago saw the sky as a firmament. You know, it was like this crystalline sphere that may have had holes poked in it, and, the sun was on the other side or some light source, and this is what the stars look like. The Aristotle, the Aristotelian model,
yeah.
said all the planets were embedded in these crystalline spheres. So when we look at this information, the ancients had a very different impression of what was going on. Whereas today, of course, we understand astronomy and all that, what we see when we look up in the night sky. And we perceive something very, very different. And yet, the exact same type of data, the exact data set, is entering our eyes as it entered the eyes of people thousands of years ago. So in paranormal phenomena, we have a number of those kinds of things. One of the misnomers is a spirit-centric way of looking at things. That
okay.
every phenomena is blamed on the quote-unquote spirit or disembodied intelligence. It's not that that isn't occurring or that doesn't exist, because sometimes when I talk, people say, oh, he doesn't believe in ghosts or disembodied intelligence
mm-hmm.
or this and that. It's not what I mean. What I mean is that everything is blamed directly on the spirit, so that the physics of what might be going on in between is completely lost. It's overlooked. A good example is an advertisement that was on TV several years ago where it was an automobile advertisement, but
yeah.
it actually showed a driver moving down the road just as if that driver was sitting in a car, his hands were up on a steering wheel and is seated, but the car was completely invisible. And so, you know, he was moving down the road, moving towards the intersection, and if you could imagine all the motions that that driver would go through, and just saying, everything's due to the driver. You know, this effect is due to the driver, that effect is due to the driver, with a complete ignoring of the automobile and the actual mechanics of what's going on.
Okay.
So it's easy for paranormal investigators to overlook those kinds of things when they have a spirit-centric mindset,
yeah,
which is the traditional way of looking at it. A good example of this, if we've got enough time before
yeah
the break,
no, we're good.
is this idea of when people have malfunctioning equipment or they feel cold spots. And the traditional explanation is, well, the spirit is drawing energy in order to manifest physically. And that's what's causing batteries to appear as if they're draining or thermal cold spots, this type of thing. This comes from that spirit-centric mindset. But if we examine the physics of it, the physics for this just doesn't exist. It just isn't there. And I'll give you an example that, for example, this idea is based loosely on Einstein's equation, his famous equation, that energy and matter are equivalent, that matter can be converted to energy and energy can be converted to matter. But when you examine the actual formula, E equals mc squared, the amount of energy that is required to materialize matter is astronomical. It's off the charts. The entire energy output of our sun is not sufficient to materialize 1 ounce of matter. So if you were talking about a cold spot at 10 to 20 degrees, maybe 3 foot across, and saying there's sufficient energy for something to physically manifest, it just isn't there. You would be talking about how many hundreds of square miles had just dropped to negative 273 degrees centigrade, absolute zero.
Yeah.
Gather enough energy to even make some kind of a wispy, smoky type of a manifestation for a fraction of a second. Now, it's not to say that these things don't occur,
mm-hmm,
but the idea of looking at things spirit-centrically is what leads us down into these, false assumptions.
Yeah.
As far as electrical equipment malfunctioning, I refer people to think about another field of alternate study, which is ufology, where in a close proximity to UFOs, the exact same phenomena is often described. You know, cars go dead, flashlights don't work, radios don't work, batteries seem to just drain down to nothing in a close proximity to a UFO. But nobody on that side of the fence, so to speak, would ever claim that the UFO is draining their batteries in order to physically manifest.
Well, I've actually heard of people like at supposed haunted places to where their equipment stopped working, but then once they took themselves out of the environment, it started working again. So maybe it's exposure to some kind of energy field.
Well, you're correct. That's the most common report. And, of course, that exact same type of mm-hmm a recovery of the equipment is also reported in ufology.
Yeah.
But here's where it's almost embarrassingly amusing.
Okay.
That these same paranormal investigators are taking these EMF meters and reading the emergence of electromagnetic fields. Of course, they're not bringing oscilloscopes in for the most part, so they don't
yeah
know at what frequency these fields are occurring.
Okay.
But here is a phenomenon that we know is well established in physics, that certain electromagnetic fields can cause the exact same effect to electrical equipment.
Yeah.
And so the investigators see in their equipment tail measuring electromagnetic fields in the same local arena, and because they got a ghost stuck in their head, they literally cannot see what's happening in front of their eyes.
Yeah.
Okay. Thomas, I'd like to ask you something and add to this, because I have been a proponent of this for years now, trying to establish a sound scientific methodology within paranormal investigating, and I've harped on this so much, the listeners and readers are probably sick of hearing it. But the thing is, earlier, Chad had asked you about how paranormal investigators could establish a sound scientific definition of the paranormal that would stand up to peer review. One of the difficult things that I've seen in this is, as you're speaking now, paranormal activity to date has not been quantified. Therefore, in science, if it has not been quantified, it cannot be measured or weighed, because we cannot determine what it is to measure and weigh it. So therefore, if you're out, just like you mentioned, hunting with an EMF or any other meter that you choose to use, you cannot say that you are measuring a ghost or whatever, because you don't know what you're measuring. You can be measuring something, but not necessarily paranormal, or not necessarily what you think. Like you said, the mindset there, you know, they have that spiritual mindset, and therefore they think they're measuring that. When if it went before a scientific review, a peer review, it would never stand. Now, based on your premise, how would you recommend investigators go about establishing a sound scientific investigation within paranormal investigations?
Well, that's a million-dollar question. It's one of the many million-dollar questions in this field. And I think, really, what it goes back to, the root of what we're talking about here, is the examination of why investigators are doing what they're doing. In other words, what motivates an individual to be a paranormal investigator to begin with? And there's all kinds of motivations in this field, just like in most other fields. People get into paranormal research for all kinds of reasons. So for someone who wants to experience the paranormal, this is why some investigators do what they do. They want the personal experience. They don't need anything scientific. They could walk in without any instrument whatsoever.
Oh, I agree. I agree. I agree 100%. But then again, there are several, and we have the pleasure of knowing some of these folks who are dead serious on the science aspect of it. And in a lot, you can go back historically, and I'm sure you know this. You probably researched this during your book. For years, in parapsychologists and things like that, people like that who have actually tried to do this and study this in the field, and had a very difficult time of quantifying paranormal activity. They could get readings, and they could get activity, but it was very difficult to associate those readings with the activity on a sound scientific level using empirical evidence and data. And there, we've discussed this before, I would think more that there has to be a standardized type of investigating methodology in order for this to be successful, because without an established database where evidence can be entered into it and then compared, and statistical analysis and probabilities and all this can be put into place, it would be very difficult to do for any investigation to stand up to a peer review.
Yes, it can be, but there are ways through it. Of course, the first thing, for the small percentage of paranormal investigators that are actually doing this for the advancement of science, for the advancement of human knowledge when it comes to understanding how the universe works, so to speak, or how these type of phenomena work. The first thing that they need to do is have some sort of a scientific education. They don't have to be Einstein, and you don't have to have a physical doctor's degree. But you do have to have some fundamentals as to the science of what you're dealing with. And, of course, first and foremost is an understanding of the scientific method.
My point exactly. That's my point. You know, a sound understanding of the scientific method, how it works, and what you need to do to acquire information to utilize that methodology within your investigations. And as of yet, very little is out there that can help people do that. So that was my point.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we need to be focusing on, I think, in this field, and helping people along in those investigations. If you ever want the paranormal to rise to that status out of a pseudoscience, which is what it's considered now, unfortunately, because you mentioned ancients and their view of the sky, by practice in everyday life, I'm an archaeologist, and I've done this for years and years and years.
Oh.
So scientific methods are extremely important to me, and I use it every day. But I, you know, as an anthropologist, will tell you that some of the very first writings and readings were about supernatural activity. The very first things ever written down in history thousands of years ago were about paranormal activity. Now, to me, based on human nature and culture and the way people interact, something was happening. People were seeing things. They were experiencing things. But what were they experiencing? And you touched on that earlier about one of your theories with physics, and how... And I can't remember exactly how you worded it, but about being able to experience those types of things without actually touching them and what the perceptions they get. Now, when this happened back then, you know, you have to understand people tend, and they do this today, to describe things within their realm of experience or worldview. Now, when you take that into consideration, you have to, even as a scientist, you have to put credibility into this. Something is happening.
Mm-hmm.
But what? What is it? That's the question. And how do we go about, as paranormal investigators, finding out what that is?
Well, to give you just one example, because there's a number of them. And basically what we're looking at here, though, is a twofold problem. In other words, there are two solutional elements that are required to elevate this to a science. And, of course, one of them is what we're talking about with the scientific method, experimentation. And I want to give an example of that. But the other aspect of it is a theoretical framework, a hypothesis that needs to be tested. Because without a hypothesis, you can't do science.
Exactly.
All you're doing is collecting data.
Right.
And to go back to one of my original points, since paranormal phenomena is physically observable, and this is what people need to think about, what we're experiencing are real physical effects. Consequently... Mm. They must be being generated in it and conveyed in a way that is consistent with the physics of the universe.
Right.
Even if we don't fully know all of those physical laws yet, we're still in the process of working on it.
Right. And part of a methodology is establishing a hypothesis that can be tested. And under any hypothesis, when you test it, you look for similar results with similar situations. And that helps you form your theory. And, you know, the difficulty is within this field, it seems to be so ephemeral how can you do this? You know, how can you establish a testable hypothesis within paranormal investigating? And
well,
that
is the part of the puzzle that some people have said that my work has actually solved. I've come up with the theoretical model.
Okay.
Which answers to pertinent questions that are presented to it. But before we get into that, I wanted to give an example of what you were talking about how to approach an aspect of a paranormal investigation scientifically. So let's take a look at electromagnetic fields for a moment.
Okay.
All right. And anyone who is serious about scientific study of the paranormal needs to immerse themselves in the study of electromagnetic fields. Because our problem is that we live in a world today that is awash in electromagnetic fields. We have electromagnetism coming at us from all different directions, of all different kinds of frequencies that literally flood our environment. You know, just the communications that we have today, GPS, cell towers, I mean, on and on and on. Television broadcasts, radio broadcasts, even electrical wiring and those types of things. We're awash in a sea of electromagnetism. And when those compression waves converge, which they can sometimes do, they themselves can cause a different kind of electromagnetic field to converge or to emerge from the convergence of other fields. And so how do we examine this? How do we research this, assuming that there is a specific, our hypothesis would be this, that there would be a specific type of electromagnetic reading that would be characteristic of what paranormal phenomena produces, as opposed to the other kinds of electromagnetic fields. So the first thing that we would have to do is to, first of all, study electromagnetism and understand waves and how they operate and how they propagate. And then we would have to set up specific kind of equipment that measures the quality of electromagnetic frequencies. Not just the amount. An EMF meter is nothing. It's like a photographer running around the countryside with a light meter.
Right.
You know, I mean, what's it going to do without the camera? So we would need to set up equipment that measures frequency, the various types of electromagnetic fields, and at what frequency they're occurring. Then, if we measure an electromagnetic frequency that is not in the normal background, and furthermore associate that with the emergence of a paranormal event, now we've got science.
Now see, that's a start, because then what you're doing is isolating, like you said, a non-normal background measurement. And
yeah, something
and
that is scientifically verifiable and,
right,
you know, and recognizable as being a paranormal frequency.
Right. So then your next research question would be, what is this non-normal frequency and what is its cause? Or is it a causative effect? Do you see what I mean? Is it causative?
Absolutely.
Is it causing an activity, or is it being caused by an activity? That would be the next approach. But yes,
well,
that's the start.
Based on, if we're going to take the scientific definition of the paranormal as non-locality,
right,
as a non-local effect,
okay,
that we're going to work under the hypothesis, under the premise, that what we are measuring right now are effects. We are accepting as paranormal an aspect of what we're examining that tells us that the cause is so far unmeasurable.
Okay.
What we're going to try to be measuring for are effects. And the effects have to be looked for, so to speak.
Exactly.
You know, the hypothesis is that we are going to be able to measure an electromagnetic effect that defies explanation in the normal range of electromagnetism that surrounds us.
Right.
And
okay.
So when we put those two things together and associate them with the emergence of a paranormal event and then repeat that at a next location, and then this investigator repeats the same thing, and this one repeats the same thing. Now we have science.
Right, but we can't just limit it to electromagnetic activity. We would have to look at all geospatial activity, such as natural science things, you know, your magnetic fields, your static fields, your barometric temperatures, your all types, you know. I mean, there's been people that talked about crystals, of course, quartz crystals, we know, emit energy, that type of thing, your geologic type things, and all of these aspects would have to be measured. That's why I had mentioned years ago about the use of full-spectrum cameras in paranormal investigating, because, you know, with the paranormal not being quantified, how do we know what spectrum that it's coming in on? How do we know what spectrum it's being measured within? And you can't go out with an infrared and say, okay, I got paranormal activity. You can't go out with a regular camera. I mean, you might catch these things sometimes, but we still don't know what spectrum of light, you know, those types of things. All this would have to be measured for anomalies.
Yeah. And this is where the theoretical model comes into play.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Because what it does is that it confines what we're looking for to a specific range, a specific area, a specific collection of measurements that are predicted by the theory. And so, for example, give you an example, because you said you're involved in archaeology.
Right.
All right. If you are digging, excavating at a certain geological layer, we have a theoretical framework that tells us what we would reasonably expect to find at that particular layer, so mm-hmm. that our efforts are going to be focused at finding those things that our
right.
framework predicts will be there. You know, in other words, we're not going to be looking for a Craftsman wrench.
Right.
You know, at a 4,000 BC stratum.
Yeah, we'd hope not.
No. I mean, if you find one, that's wonderful. You know, welcome
but,
world
yeah.
of the scorned and the damned, you know.
Well, that would be your outlier, because I can say with certainty that didn't happen. So,
You know, in paranormal phenomena, this is where the theory is also vitally important, because it narrows our focus to the predictions made by the theory, and that's science. We're going to go out there and measure for the types of effects that are predicted by the theoretical model. We're going to test that model. In other words, we're not doing spaghetti al dente, just throwing everything against a wall to see what sticks, because that's what the paranormal investigative field is doing now.
Right.
You know, they're flying around by the seat of their pants. You know, they're running through a labyrinth in pitch dark. You know, we need to have a framework. And so, you know, to make a long story short, part of my framework, my theoretical model, says that the bulk, the vast majority of paranormal effects, the kinds of effects that I call secondary paranormal effects, are perfectly predicted by a non-local bending of space. That when you begin to warp local space, it would produce all the effects that we see, what I call secondary paranormal effects, What I mean by secondary paranormal effects are the changes in the local environment that create the conditions necessary for the primary paranormal effect, which is the materialization of non-local information into our local space.
Okay. So go ahead, Thomas. I'm sorry. No, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead. Continue.
So what we have measurements of the local conditions and how they are changing. And then we have, in some instances, the ones that paranormal investigators really thirst to experience and measure and record, the materialization of information within those changed conditions that are conducive to that materialization.
Okay. Thomas, from here, Chad has a question from chat that needs to be posted, and I'd like to take a second to do that before we go to break, so we can get back to this shortly. Mm-hmm. Chad?
Yeah, I got a question from Stephen Hill in chat. He goes, you know, basically, if paranormal groups, investigation groups standardize, won't they all get the same results? And basically, will science accept it?
If it's done in a scientific way,
okay,
which means we have a hypothesis, we have questions to ask, we form hypotheses from those questions, and then from asking that hypothesis, other questions, and if it answers it in a consistent way, then we have a theory. And then that theory is going to make predictions that we can experimentally test. If we approach it in that way, then yes, if multiple paranormal investigators using very strict scientific standards can produce the exact same results, and we already have experiments already set up that, mm-hmm, that they can do this with, then yes, you're talking about something which science would find it very difficult to ignore.
Well, I think a lot of people in the paranormal field, they tend to, you know, something happens and they get excited and they don't go through the necessary steps to try to prove that whatever happened to them is, you know, a real thing. You know, they don't, almost like they don't, sometimes they don't understand how the process works. You know, you have to establish, you know, this is what happened, and people come in behind you and look at what you did, and they try to, you know, recreate that to, you know, say, well, yeah, this is what happened. So I think a lot of times it's just they don't understand the whole process.
Well, that's true. I mean, you're talking about, again, mm-hmm, number one, we're talking about a very, very, very small percentage of paranormal investigators,
yeah,
that are truly motivated by the advancement of science.
Yeah.
There's very few of them. If everybody was going to be honest about their motivations, that would be the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the other issue is this very narrow group has not, up until recently, had a theoretical model from which to devise experiments and from which to work.
Well, whether, you know, I hate to say it, but I think a lot of the paranormal field is driven by the television shows, and there's not a lot of peer review, you know, and what I would consider sound investigative practices, you know, as an example for paranormal investigators to say, hey, this sounds like a good way to investigate, you know, looking at K2 meters and flashlights and stuff like that. I think, I don't think the TV shows are the best thing to go by.
Well, no, absolutely not. I mean, they've been a two-edged sword.
Yeah.
They have certainly brought paranormal phenomena into the public consciousness,
mm-hmm,
to a point to where it never had been before.
Yeah.
but the other half of it is that, yes, it's orchestrated, it's contrived,
mm-hmm,
and its goal is to entertain.
Make good TV.
Yeah, they've got, yep, to sell cornflakes. I, yep, mean, you know, I don't want to throw stones at anybody in
particular,
but I'm in the business to do that since I myself am not dependent on the paranormal field for what I do.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's say Haunted Collector, okay?
Yeah.
His gimmick is that, you know, hauntings are the result of a specific object. You know,
okay.
It's a gimmick. It's
yeah.
contrived. He figured it out.
Yeah.
He came up with a winner. Ghost hunters were the first ones that really just went out and did paranormal investigations. But then when that started to fade off, they had to start coming up with gimmicks. So you had paranormal cops and,
yeah.
you know, ghost adventures, which is very theatrical.
Yeah.
because the guy that put it together, that's what his degree is in, you know, media.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, I mean, think about it. My goodness, you know, if what Zaffis is saying is true,
mm-hmm.
this museum where he keeps all these things
yeah.
should look like flipping Dorothy's house in the tornado.
Yeah. yeah.
So you wouldn't even be able to walk near it. It would look like the house collapsing in the Amityville Horror.
Yeah. Right.
You know, it's
poltergeist. Yeah.
it's ridiculous. And what it does is at this point in time,
yeah.
what this does is hurts the scientific approach.
Mm-hmm.
My belief is that eventually, like all fads,
yeah,
you know,
fad,
I mean,
yeah.
Does everybody remember Kate plus eight? You know,
yeah.
This is going to fade away. And that's going to leave a vacuum. And that's where real science could come in and fill that vacuum and pick up the baton, so to speak, and carry it from there.
Well, I think the closest that any show's ever come was the one where they investigated a prison and they were investigating ultrasound or very high-pitched sounds that were causing people to have experiences like hearing voices and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't really make for good TV because it kind of put you to sleep.
Well, there you go.
That's a problem. That's a problem.
You know, doesn't have that thrill
yeah.
factor to it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's you know, we talk about these TV shows on interviews, and, you know, it really comes back to the same thing.
Yeah.
Those who are in it for the science of it, and that's a very, very small percentage, recognize how harmful these things
are. Yeah.
Everybody else thinks it's great, and we're the... You know, we're the gnomes that are hiding under the bridge.
Yeah.
The scientific guys
yeah.
are the bridges.
That's soldiers. Well put, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have to agree. It's a two-edged sword. It brought paranormal investigating to the forefront of interest within the social order, but then again, it didn't do a lot to promote what true paranormal investigators are out there trying to do. And so you have to take the good with the bad, just like anything, I guess.
Yeah. Well, you know, and again, with my work, the important thing about my work is that it is finally, for the first time, not just in the history of paranormal research, but in the history of science, has come up with a workable model that can explain what's experienced and observed.
Yeah.
And that's something new. That's not been around before. And what's more is that it actually makes predictions that are experimentally testable. And there has been a big test on my theory close to a month ago that was conducted by a gentleman, David Roundtree.
Can we get to it after the break? Because I was actually going to touch it. You're talking about supergeometry, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's what I was going to get after the break. I got one more question before we go to break. It's from Frank R. Santoriga, and he was wanting to know if you're going to be coming to Michigan anytime soon, because he's wanting to hear more of your thoughts on the paranormal.
I will be speaking and presenting at the Paradigm Symposium in October in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Okay.
A very big event. So, you know, that's about the closest to Michigan I'm going to get there.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment with Thomas Fusco on the Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network.
Hi, this is Cheryl Knight, editor for Paranormal Underground Magazine.
And I'm Chad Wilson, Paranormal Underground Magazine's publisher. Every month, Paranormal Underground Magazine explores the unexplained by examining topics that range from haunted sites to ufology to cryptozoology. We also spotlight investigators and researchers who continue to pave the way in a field that seeks to answer some of life's most complex questions.
If you want to read about topics like psychic phenomena, demonology, conspiracy theories, crystals and herbology, and much, much more, visit ParanormalUnderground.net and start exploring the unexplained today. Visit us today at ParanormalUnderground.net and get a 12-month digital subscription for 15% off the cover price.
Do you want to keep up with what's going on at Paranormal Underground?
Then tweet us on Twitter at ParanormalUG.
Or follow us on Facebook at Paranormal Underground.
Meet us on MySpace, Paranormal Underground.
There's no need to be in the dark about what's going on at Paranormal Underground. Join us on your favorite social networking site today.
Ranger Station.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting in the forest.
Uh-huh.
1 second I'm having a smoke. Next thing I know, I'm face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Wow.
And he told me it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
Did you know 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans?
I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous and you're not. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
It's Karen Frazier. I'm here with my co-host of Paranormal Underground Radio, Rick Hale.
Hi, everyone.
We invite you to join Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network to explore the unexplained every Thursday night from 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific and other times in the flyover states.
Each week, we talk with investigators in the field, researchers, authors, and experts about topics that include paranormal investigation, ufology, cryptozoology, and spirituality.
So, please join us each Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern for Paranormal Talk with great guests right here on HazyRadioNetwork.com.
this is Hazy, and you're listening to the Hazy Radio Network.
Welcome back to Paranormal Underground Radio. Tonight we have Thomas Fusco. Before the break, you had started to talk about a story with something about David Rowntree. Would you like to continue that?
Yes. My theory, which is called the theory of supergeometry, geometric theory, which is laid out in my book, Behind the Cosmic Veil, makes certain predictions that are experimentally testable. This is at the heart of science. You know, one of the things that Einstein's relativity predicted was the able to record the bending of space. The space was actually a substantive field. It wasn't just a void, as Newton had claimed. And it took 19 years for the proper experiment to be conducted that proved his prediction, that brought out his prediction and confirmed it. And then that's where everything changed.
Okay.
So there's a number of predictions that my theory makes about paranormal phenomena. And this gentleman, David Rowntree, who is an expert in electromagnetics and acoustics, and has been a researcher for over 35 years into the paranormal, has conducted some of these experiments that have confirmed the predictions made by my model.
Okay.
You know, and I'm going to toss out a few of them.
Okay.
One of the predictions that my model makes is that paranormal phenomena, as I mentioned earlier, is associated with a local expansion of space-time. If you can imagine a bubble of space-time beginning to swell and expand in local space, it would have certain effects on its surrounding environment. For example, one of the things that it predicts would be the measurement of an independent gravitational field, that it would be autonomous, completely independent of the Earth's gravitational field. And moreover, rather than being unidirectional, as local gravity here is, because the lines of gravitational effect all point down to the center of the Earth, this would be something that would be measurable on three axes, because it would be its own gravitational field expanding.
Okay.
And one of the things that Rowntree is great at is being very clever at devising experiments to test such things. So what he decided to do was to use one of these portable devices. I don't know whether it was an iPad or an iTouch. I think it's something like an iTouch.
Yeah.
That has a digital gyroscope in it, so that no matter how you turn the device, the picture stays parallel to the ground.
Okay.
Follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So consequently, if you mounted one of those stationary, and if a gravitational fluctuation occurred in its range, the picture would move by itself while the device stays stationary. And he hooked several of them together with a software program and actually recorded this effect at, you know, at the same time where, let's say, like an EVP was being recorded.
Okay.
Now, this is gigantic. Okay? And this is one of the things, like I was saying on break, which is one of the most difficult things to express, that's been to express to the paranormal community, how earth-shattering this is, how groundbreaking this is.
Yeah.
Last year, when CERN had its announcement that they had actually discovered a boson, which behaves substantially like the one that Peter Higgs predicted in the 60s, which is why it's called the Higgs boson, Peter Higgs openly wept at the meeting.
Okay.
Because his prediction was proved true.
Yeah.
These are the things that shake the world. And so we have these kinds of experiments that are being conducted that are confirming this theoretical model in my book.
Yeah. Well, I had a fellow investigator who had talked about how the scalar field was somehow involved in paranormal phenomena. He actually had developed a microphone that was basically insulated to actual sound, and it was actually it was an electric microphone, so it would actually pick up the gravity waves or something to do with that, and it was supposed to give you more clear EVPs. I don't know. That's just like some of the equipment out there that people use. It doesn't always, you might think it does one thing, but it does another. But
yes, and again, this is where a theoretical model is necessary to avoid us having to waste all this time and to do almost like what I say, the shotgun effect. Just throw all kinds of stuff out there to see what sticks. And then we have this large body of data, and nobody can make any sense of it because there's no theoretical framework in which this data can be plugged into. Perfect example. For centuries, we have observed the effects of volcanoes and earthquakes. And we knew an awful lot about what the effects look like, just like we do in paranormal phenomena. I mean, we have so much data gathered, it's mind-numbing. It's all the same kind of information. But we didn't really understand how earthquakes worked or how volcanoes were formed until in the 50s somebody revived a decades-old theory, which came to be known as continental drift, plate tectonics. And once we had that theory, boom, the veil was lifted. We understood earthquakes. We understood how they were related to volcanoes. We even understood now how those things were related to mountain formation, which was never really fully understood before. Same body of data, but a theoretical framework that answered so many questions perfectly that a young school child now could describe the basic principles of something that escaped the greatest minds in the world for centuries.
Yeah.
And that's what my theoretical model provides to the paranormal field.
Yeah. Well, I had another question from chat from Frank R. Santarica. Do you consider anyone currently in the paranormal field legit?
Oh, my. Legit in relative to what?
I would say probably they actually want to prove the paranormal beyond the fact that they're like maybe a TV show or something like that.
Well, I think it's a very small percentage.
Yeah.
I know that Mark Kays from the Pennsylvania Paranormal Association, he's very serious about it. The gentleman I mentioned, David Roundtree, Dr. Stephen Rourke, there's a number of them. There's a small handful of them. The vast majority of the rest of them are in all different kinds of things. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of fake evidence out there, folks.
Yeah,
that's right.
Any evidence today can be faked. And I've encountered a lot of it.
Yeah.
And I've been able to identify those fakes because I have a theoretical model that tells me that such and such a thing cannot be. And subsequently it proves out to be. So, as far as legitimate as in legitimately dedicated to whatever it is that they're doing, I'm sure there's a lot of those.
Yeah.
But legitimate as to whether they're really serious about the scientific or the accuracy of what they're doing, I think there's a very small percentage of those.
Yeah.
Mm. I agree with that. Now, earlier, just a minute ago, you were elaborating on a framework and talking about volcanoes and earthquakes and all that as an example, and I followed it, but the enigma within that is, even though now, based on that, we can tell you what they are, we still can't predict them.
No, that's true. However, if we're talking about, this is one of the arguments that has been launched against the paranormal, if this is where you're going with this, that, the predictability of it makes it unscientific, that it cannot be reproduced on demand. My argument is that that's a bunch of poppycock. as far as it making it quote-unquote unscientific or not conforming to a scientific standard. And the example I use is solar flares. Do we study with scientific methods solar flares? Absolutely. We've done it for years. It's a legitimate field of astrophysics. Can we reproduce them in the laboratory? No. Can we predict them? No. But what we can do is this. We focus our measuring equipment upon the solar disk, which is the place where solar flares occur. And so when a solar flare occurs, we're able to measure it and study it. Very scientific.
Right.
If we have location that is paranormally active, we place our measuring equipment in its vicinity and focus on it, and eventually we're going to get paranormal activity.
Right, I understand. But on the other side of that argument, a solar flare, on one hand, has been quantified. We know what it is. We know what it's made from. We can measure it. We can weigh it. Therefore, we can study it. Paranormal activity, on the other hand, has not been. That's the point.
Well, yes, and that's because we're in the infancy of doing this. In other words, the work of David Rowntree and my theoretical work together has, for the first time in this field, have laid a scientific foundation by which these things can be done. So much so that we both anticipate, if we find the time and the right kind of help, within the next several years, to actually be able to submit the first scientific paper for peer review on paranormal phenomena. We have the raw materials for the first time in history necessary to do that.
Well, I got a question. And pertaining to spirits, wouldn't it actually require the cooperation of paranormal entities to actually, you know, working with you? You know, they could just say, well, I'm not going to, you know, participate and, you know, go somewhere else. And then you're left with nothing.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, you're talking about something which is, you know, intent.
Mm-hmm.
Or will of a disembodied intelligence. And I'm trying to choose my words very carefully, try to avoid some of the, you know, the terms that have carried too much baggage with them.
Yeah.
But, you know, from our experience, that we don't find this to be a predominant obstacle.
Okay.
The observation of paranormal effects. These things occur on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't seem to be necessarily dependent on an intelligent intent.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, if I was walking on my lawn and I happened to step on a bug and squash it.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't my intellectual intent to step on that bug.
Yeah.
The effect occurred just because of my very presence there.
Okay.
Right.
Well, I know how you talk in your book about how, basically how the spiritual and the physical are pretty much, you know, when it boils down to it, they're one and the same. And how you mentioned how good and evil, you know, in the form of superphysical absolutes, how they play a role in the emergence of physical dimensions. First off, you know, what define what superphysical means, you know, for our listeners, and then how, you know, how does good and evil concept, you know, the concepts, how can they play a part in defining reality?
Oh my, yeah, that's a big question.
Yeah,
because as you know, my theoretical work.
Uh-huh.
Actually, it also incorporates within its model certain traditional religious principles,
mm-hmm.
which is what's so fantastic when you can take a religious principle and make a prediction about physical sciences with it.
Yeah.
That's going somewhere way beyond metaphysics and philosophy. But as far as what superphysical is, imagine a superset, for example, a physical reality.
Okay.
Let's put it in another way. The prevailing philosophy of physics today is that reality is the physical universe.
Okay.
And that the physical universe is reality. And they're synonymous and they're all-inclusive. But what some have postulated in the scientific community and what religious sages and philosophers have been talking about for centuries,
mm-hmm.
not many, is that reality comprises more than the physical universe. That there is another aspect of reality that is not physical. Now, what some of the theorists of the 20th century who have delved into this, and these are not fringe physicists, they're mainstream, well-respected physicists, have surmised that this overlay of reality or of the physical universe is not physical. It is pre-physical. It is not spatial or temporal. It lies beyond space and time. And yet space-time and everything that's in it emerges from it. David Bohm, one of the most prominent and recognized mainstream physicists of the 20th century, he had a name for it, he called it implicate order.
Okay.
It wasn't physical, but it gave rise to the explicate order of time, space, matter, and energy. Another physicist, well-recognized, John Wheeler, called it pre-geometry. David Finkelstein, his version of it is called coherent superpositions. And my particular flavor of it is called supergeometry.
Yeah.
And basically what it says is that there is a collection of information in order, if you will. David Bohm called it implicate order. If you like the more psychic aspects or that dimension, Edgar Cayce called it the Akasha. The Bible calls it the Word of God, or the wisdom of God. Plato called it forms. That these blueprints, these matrix, these patterns, give rise to the order of the physical universe. The only thing that had been missing from all of those models has been a mechanism by which that information materializes into ordered physical reality. And this is what my book provides for the first time. Supergeometric theory describes the mechanics by which information materializes into physical reality. To put it in a short, Reader's Digest version, what my theory says is that the same thing that gives rise to an apparition is the same mechanism that gave rise to the entire physical universe.
Okay.
The only difference being is that in paranormal events, we get to see the process occur in real time, whereas with most objects in the universe, the process has already occurred, and we're seeing it in its fully developed form. We can't see it in the process of emerging.
Yeah.
Paranormal phenomena gives us a certain window of reality that allows us to observe the very process by which physical structures come into being.
Okay, but based on that theory, though, is that a testable theory? And if so, how can it be tested?
Well, the test of the theory is its predictions. And I mentioned something about the gravitational fields. If I want to go into the world of physics, another thing that it predicted is that because what we're seeing physically is tied into and emerges from the superphysical, there are certain things that physics has devised theories for to give these effects strictly physical definitions or physical expressions. because according to the predominant philosophy, everything has to be material as far as a cause. Whereas if we accept a superphysical source, it leads us to understand that some of these strange things like string theory don't necessarily have to be, because we're not dealing with a completely physical reality. We're only dealing with a reality that's part physical. So, for example, one of the predictions this model made is that there is no such thing as supersymmetry. Now, supersymmetry is the theory that every subatomic particle has a heavier twin that modifies its behavior in some way, because we see the subatomic world working in ways that are non-local. We see effects with no local physical causes. And due to the predominant philosophy in physics, they demand that this unexplained cause must be material. So they make up imaginary substances like supersymmetrical particles and dark matter, dark energy. All right. Now, for five decades, it has been predominant in the field of physics, the particle physics, a belief in the reality of supersymmetry, of supersymmetrical particles. And I flew in the face of that and said there is no such thing as supersymmetry, because my model explains the effects that mainstream physics is trying to explain with a material hypothetical particle.
Yeah.
All right?
Okay.
Now, towards the end of last year, we finally got results out of the Large Hadron Collider at CERN in Switzerland.
Yeah.
That said, based on our findings, we now are pretty sure that there is no such thing as supersymmetry.
Okay.
So my model predicted it in defiance of established physics.
Yeah.
Well, it's impressive that it did that, but how does this tie in with the paranormal and the paranormal investigating? I can understand how it's tying in with physics, but I'm being lost, I think, when I'm trying to relate this to the paranormal and paranormal investigation.
Understood. Here's the substance of my work, and here's the thrust of my work, I should say, and here's where this differs from what has come before. I am not a paranormal investigator.
Okay.
My theory talks about how the universe is put together. It is a conceptual theory of everything. And if it's a theory of everything, then it embodies all observable phenomena. And so what my physical theory differs from others that are out there is that I embrace and incorporate the collection of data of observations that we call paranormal phenomena into that theory. And this is where my work differs. When I'm talking about physics, it's because the paranormal is just a collection of data that goes into that physical theory. So how it relates to the paranormal is how it explains what happens in paranormal phenomena. So for example, one of the conclusions that was formed by one of the researchers in the 20th century who worked alongside of Einstein in collaboration with him on his unified field theory is Theodore Calusa. And he was the only person who ever balanced Einstein's unified field theory equations by using a fifth coordinate outside of space-time. He came to conclude that gravity itself was non-local, that what created gravity wells and the bending of space occurred from outside of space-time.
Okay. Well,
so if that's the case, then what we have is a unique situation in the field of physical theory where matter and energy does not bend the space around it. It's that matter and energy materialize and form within the non-local bends of space.
Okay.
It's the exact opposite of what the current model of gravity is. Now, let me take it one step further. If that's the case, then we can have a depression or an expansion, what I call a differential field bubble, that can emerge from a superphysical source into local space. And this is what I say causes paranormal phenomena. That this bubble of space-time emerges, it begins to expand and swell. It reacts with the surrounding physical content. In most cases, in a haunted house, for example, that would be the atmosphere. That's physical content. It's atoms and molecules. It's not like the bends of space in the vacuums of the cosmos. It's happening locally. There would be an interaction between that outer surface of the expansion of space-time and the local physical content. We already know where space is bent. The outer perimeter of it crushes the geometry of space. It compresses it. The experiment that I spoke about 19 years after Einstein came up with this theory proved that. But if we are going to crush space with physical content on it, what we're going to do is we're going to excite the molecules and atoms that are in that physical content that are occupying that crushed area of space. And when that occurs, the electrons in the atoms begin to jump into their higher orbits or valences. Now, when that happens, the first thing that we would be able to measure would be an electromagnetic field that emerges from thin air.
Okay. So I can see how that starts to relate. But my question, I guess, would be, now I'm following you. I understand physics enough to do that. But when it comes to scientific methodology and all this, I guess what I'm trying to ask is, how can a theory, any theory, pertain to something that has yet to be quantified?
Well, it hasn't been quantified yet.
Right, paranormal activity, not your theory. The paranormal activity itself is what I'm talking about. Has not been quantified to date.
All right, let's approach this from a different perspective. When you say quantified, because you mentioned it several times, tell me specifically what it is exactly that you mean by that.
What I mean by quantified in science, in order to quantify something, you can measure it, you can weigh it, you understand its properties, you know what it's emitting. It's like if I pick up this rock, say a rock here, okay, I can measure that rock, the width, the height, the length, the weight, the density. I can do experiments to understand what its makeup is, both chemically and geologically, and all, you following me now? All of that. Now, for instance...
All right, let me interrupt you for a second.
Okay.
All right. How do we quantify quantum entanglement? Which is a known and widely accepted... you know, quantum physical effect. How do we quantify that?
Through theory. I guess in physics. I mean, I'm not a physicist. Like I said, I'm an archaeologist. But a lot of physical theories, based physics theories, are based on theorem and mathematical equations.
True, but because you're involved in archaeology,
right,
your field of work involves 100% local causality. There is nothing in your field.
Not necessarily. No, that is not. That's not a true statement. Not local causality. No, there's a lot of factors that play into archaeology. Thus. The type of science that we have to study. That's why you have a degree in anthropology, then you have a degree in archaeology in order to do that. You have a very broad spectrum in order to be able to understand all the causative factors that come into play with these things.
And, okay, I understand what you're saying. Let me go back again to the definition of non-locality. All right, because here's where the problem is occurring. What we deal with in quantum physics is very different than something like archaeology.
Right.
And the reason being is because every effect that you observe and measure in archaeology has a physical cause that either in the current time frame or in past time frame was locally connected to the effect. In other words, if you dig up a pot that was made 3,000 years ago, mm-hmm. there were physical hands that shaped that pot.
Right.
Those, it's local. That's a local cause to the effect of the pot. It's in a different temporal frame, but it's still locality. You're not digging up pots that were never made by any human hands.
No.
They just appeared by themselves.
No.
You're not digging up bones that once were a part of a local physical animal.
No, we don't dig up bones, but okay.
Right. But quantum physics deals with those kinds of effects all the time.
Okay.
So we have observations where there's no local physical cause to explain it. Right now, one of the problems with the Higgs field, even though we have quantified it to an extent, we know that the particular form of the Higgs field can be measured at a mass of 125 giga electron volts
okay.
within the predicted range of 115 to 149 was the original prediction, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is the mathematical expression of the Higgs field reads a value of infinity. Which, according to our understanding of the physical universe, is not possible. So this is why we postulated that there was a supersymmetrical twin to the Higgs boson that we expected to find before we found the boson.
I see.
And we never found it. And yet, the boson has a finite effect, but its mathematics describe an infinite value for its field, which means its field cannot be physical.
Right.
So here we are. So would you say that we have quantified the Higgs boson?
Not yet. They haven't.
No, I would disagree with you.
Well, it's still
quantified
up for...
It. We know what it is, how it measures.
Right, we kind of know, but it's still up for peer review and study. I mean, it's very recent. And it's still out there. Now, not that it won't be. Don't get me wrong.
But what
I'm not being
about
skeptical.
Here is the problem with the Higgs boson is we haven't qualified it.
Right. And that's the next step. We quantify, then we qualify. And okay. that's the whole point of what I'm saying. Before we can put a theory toward the paranormal, we need to take the steps to quantify, and then we have to qualify it. Those are the steps.
I disagree with you.
As a scientist,
I'll explain to you why. No. I'll explain to you why.
Okay.
The statement is wrong, because the theoretical model must come first.
Well, there's always
a theory. We can quantify what we're dealing with and qualify.
Right.
I asked you earlier, how do you quantify quantum entanglement?
Okay.
All right, here we have a phenomena where we have two correlated particles that are entangled that we can create this artificially by splitting a photon into two parts. And each smaller part will act exactly like the full photon, except at a lower energy level. And then we split those photons. We divide them. And we send them traveling away from each other at the speed of light. Now, nothing in the universe, in the physical universe, travels faster than light. This has been confirmed over and over and over and over again.
Right.
Einstein was correct on this.
Right.
Now, we pass particle A through a filter, a polarizing filter, that reverses its spin. Let's say we have these two particles, we've split them, and one takes an up spin and one takes a down spin. This is how we talk about polarity in quantum particles. It's not like a magnetic polarity, but these particles have opposite spins, and those two opposite spins balance in a mathematical correlation that equals the whole that they were split from. Now, we pass particle A through a polarizing filter that reverses its spin. Particle B instantaneously reverses its spin to balance the correlation, to reestablish the balance. But that happens even if that particle B is light years away from particle A.
Okay.
There is nothing physical that connects them. So all we have is an observation that we have no cause for. We have no local physical cause that can transmit information about the state of particle A at infinite velocity to particle B. We have nothing physical that can explain it. And yet, we are conducting experiments where we are increasing the distance. In fact, there was a recent one done over in Asia where they actually were able to do a quantum information teleport across this lake that was several miles long. We're manipulating these things. We know that they are established. And yet, according to your definition, we can't quantify them. So how could that be?
No. You're talking of physics. I'm talking of paranormal activity.
And paranormal activity
is?
Must conform to physics because it is a physical effect that is observable and is measurable.
It is, and I agree with that, but we still don't know what the causative nature of it is.
Well, now that's something different.
Well, when we're talking causative,
you can quantify on a scale what the intensity of an earthquake is.
Okay.
Without understanding what its physical causes are.
Yeah, but we know the physical causes of an earthquake. We know the different types.
We didn't know
like
that 100 years ago.
No, we didn't. But it just goes to point. Your point just goes to show that, based on what you just said 100 years ago, that with time and the proper scientific methodologies and research in place, that these things can be solved. We can at least come to a truer understanding of what we're trying to see and accomplish and establish, and especially within the field of paranormal science, because right now, and you have to agree with this, it's a pretty barren field when it comes to investigation and at least being investigated properly.
Mm-hmm. But there are areas where it is being investigated properly.
Yeah.
There are. I am not arguing that at all, believe me. I'm not a skeptic by any means. And
all I'm trying to say is that what we're dealing with is something just like in quantum physics. We're dealing with a class of phenomena that does not conform to locality and the normal intuitive laws and principles that we use to reckon with localized phenomena.
Right.
I argue that it is quantifiable. You know, if there is, in the entire history of paranormal research, if there was ever one legitimate EVP recorded, that's quantifiable.
Yeah, if there was ever one. And I would agree with that 100%. But the problem is, you know, how can you prove what is legitimate and what isn't right now at this time?
That's a different question.
All right. I'm going to have to cut in because we're running out of time.
Oh.
Hey, I think it's good to talk about things. I actually think that you're on the right track there, Thomas, with your super geometry and stuff like that. At least you're trying to understand, you know.
Oh, we already have a very good understanding of certain aspects of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But
it's like I said during the break,
mm-hmm.
the most difficult thing I have is to express and convey to hosts and audiences how remarkable and how astounding this work is and where we are with it.
Well, I think a lot of the problem is people don't really understand, like, You know, I understand some of the stuff you talk about, but then sometimes, you know, you're like, you know, okay, what does that mean? And, but like the layperson like me, you know, it's hard for them to understand that. So they don't actually see the implications, you know, of what you're saying. And I think once people start to understand that better, it'll become more mainstream, more accepted. Okay. Well, so we're coming up to the end of the show. Your website link is www.cosmicveil, that's VEIL.com. I know you said you would be speaking at the upcoming Spirit, Shadow, and Secrets International Symposium in the fall of 2014 in Edinburgh, Scotland. Do you have any other, you know, upcoming projects, books, or items of note that you would like to tell our audience about?
Well, as I mentioned, my other event that I'm booked at is the Paradigm Symposium.
Okay.
The annual Paradigm Symposium will be October 17th through 20th in Minneapolis, Minnesota. You just type in paradigmsymposium.com, and you know you'll find a site for it.
Okay.
It's got some of the biggest speakers in alternate studies there. The late Phil Coppins called it probably the most prominent alternate studies symposium in the world.
Okay.
And so I will be there. I don't show up at Paracons.
Yeah.
Because I don't do the kind of things to sell the popcorn.
Yeah.
You know? So I really don't do Paracons.
That's a good thing,
yeah. Well, I know, your book is called Beyond the Veil.
No, behind
the veil, sorry.
Behind
the cosmic veil.
Behind the cosmic veil, a new vision of reality emerging science, the spiritual, and the supernatural.
Yes, yes. And all that can be found at, and all about the book at www.cosmicveil, spelled V-E-I-L, cosmicveil.com.
Okay. I want to thank you for being on the show. It's been an interesting discussion, and hopefully we can have you back at some point in the future.
I would be happy to come back on. Just shoot me an email with a table.
Okay.
Get the calendar.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yep. And okay. Thomas, pleasure meeting you. Pleasure. Nice talk. Nice discussion. And thank you.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you. All right, Cheryl.
Oh, hi. Wow. I'm just like my head swimming right now. That was quite a spirited debate going on there. Pun intended. I think I want to thank Thomas Fusco for joining us again. We had him on last year. And so this was a continuation of the conversation, and it kind of blows my mind. I understand what you're saying, JD. I understand a bit about what Thomas is saying. And I think we, you know, as time goes on, we're going to make progress. I think it's going to take a lot of time. But
oh, yeah, it takes a lot. It's not something that's been studied seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, you know, without going into detail, not to split, you know, hairs, there's a certain methodology that needs to be followed. And he knows that, and he's doing that,
mm-hmm.
and it's a good thing, you know.
Yeah.
And if it can be applied to the field of paranormal investigation, it'll be a great thing. So
I agree.
You know, I agree. That's what it's all about, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, with that said, I would like to talk about next week's guest real quick. We are going to be welcoming Adam Neal to the show on June 6th. Let me just make sure. Yes, June 6th. Adam is the creator of ParanormalLight.com. That's ParanormalLight.com. And basically that's a blog dedicated to the discussion of psi-related experiences that defy mainstream scientific explanation. And I know that his blog is relatively new, but I found it very compelling, and he's actually let us run some of his work in our blog and on the magazine, which I was very grateful to. So we want to talk with him next week about his thoughts on the paranormal and all sorts of different things in that realm. And then the week after, we're actually taking the week off, and that is because my son is graduating from high school. So there will be, yeah, big day around here, June 13th. There will be no show. Sorry about that. But we'll return the week after, June 20th. So we're looking forward to the rest of the summer. We've got some great guests lined up. And I want to give a special thanks to you, JD, and you, Chad, for hosting tonight while Rick and Karen were on vacation. Thank you so much.
It was fun.
I think it was a great discussion. It's the type of show where you got to think about it for quite a while and let things kind of like mull around. And yeah, so I appreciate that a lot. I also wanted to say thank you to our chat room listeners. We have a great group of chat room listeners who usually come around every show or every few shows, and we appreciate the support. And also our listeners who may not make it to the chat room, but they listen nonetheless. And we had some international listeners tonight from the Netherlands, Thailand, Canada, and then right here in the U.S. We had a great...
Well, welcome, everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And so we appreciate all of our listeners, all of our guests, and let's keep up the conversation. I love it. On that note, I think we're ready to play our goodbye song.
And
yeah, it's time to say goodbye.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, JD. Thanks, Chad. See everybody next week here on Hazy Radio.
Okay. Till then, take care.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
If you'd like to be a guest on Paranormal Underground Radio, email editor at paranormalunderground.net. Until next time, keep exploring the unexplained at paranormalunderground.net. Please join us next week for Paranormal Underground Radio on the Hazy Radio Network.